You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined as always with my co-host, Josh Newman. Josh, it's a beautiful Tuesday morning. That's where we're doing this. How are you feeling today?
Feeling good, man. Any day in October when you can keep wearing shorts is a good day, right? Woke up, beautiful day, took the dog out, had the Birkenstocks on. We're in sneakers now, but in either case, we're wearing shorts on October 17th. Sign me up.
Oh, I'm going with the slippers mode right now, so...
You know, you're in your home office, I assume?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. We're going to do that. It's funny. I never used to be a slippers guy. And then one Christmas, I think my kids gave me slippers. And I was like, whatever, I'll try it. And now in the winter / fall, I just, you know what? I'm embracing dad life.
Yeah, I want to be, I've always aspired to be a robe guy.
Oh, yeah.
I have not done the full dive into robedom, but that is increasingly appealing. Again, dad life, right? You're tired and you're up early, and I'm gonna need to dive into robedom at some point here soon. I think
I don't know if I could be the robe guy. I mean, I'm definitely like the sweatpants and like hoodie. I mean, that's where it's at, but
yeah, comfort. All about comfort, everybody. Yeah.
I mean, that's why I shop at Costco for everything now.
Love it.
I'm a walking billboard anymore. All right, well, let's get into this. So, today we're gonna recap what happened on Saturday. Utah obviously beat California, so we'll get into that. But first, let's recap a little bit what happened in the Pac-12. I guess let's start with you, Josh. What were some of your takeaways from this weekend? There was a lot.
Yeah, obviously, you know, the Oregon-Washington game in Seattle had, you know, major Pac-12 championship consequences, national championship consequences. And that game, look, we were up in the press box covering Utah-Cal, but I think you and I both had, you know, one eye on Oregon-Washington. And that, you know, that game lived up to the hype. Michael Penix Jr. was awesome and Bo Nix was awesome. And, you know, the crowd and the atmosphere and game day was in Seattle in Pac-12 country, which is not the norm. And, you know, you had Dan Lanning, you know, being aggressive and going for it on fourth down. And, you know, it came to the final play with the missed field goal by Oregon. I thought Oregon like outplayed Washington for a lot of that game, maybe like 55-45. I thought Oregon did it enough to win, but, you know, Washington kind of has that thing, right? They're older and the quarterback is dynamic and Kalen DeBoer has put the pieces in the right place to be successful. And they're looking, you know, increasingly, not only like the Pac-12 favorite, but like a real threat to get to the college football playoff, which again, that's not the norm for the Pac-12, right? The Pac-12 has been kind of, you know, maligned here for years in terms of getting to the college football playoff, which they've only done twice since the event's inception in 2014. No Pac-12 team's gotten there since Washington back in 2016. So this Washington team looks like that Pac-12 team that could break that CFP streak. That said, if Oregon can run the table, if they potentially, you know, beat an undefeated Washington in the Pac-12 championship game, I don't think you can rule out the possibility, albeit slim, I don't think you can rule out the possibility of even two Pac-12 teams getting to a college football playoff this year.
Yeah, I think Washington has, at least for the majority of the season, looked like the most consistent. I think they have the ability to be able to be that national championship contender, as does Oregon. I really think Oregon, you know, highly of Oregon, and those games come down to, you know, minute details and being aggressive, like you talked about with Dan Lanning. Look, Washington isn't perfect, right? Their defense does give up some plays, and you know, I think
there's a bit suspect.
It is, and I think for them to be a national title contender, that has to be cleaned up a lot, and that maybe might hold them out at least as a championship game. I think, you know, they can get to the playoffs, but look, Oregon is in the same spot. I think Oregon is probably, I still believe it, the most well-balanced team in the Pac-12 right now. I think they have an ability to be able to be there. They can get back to that Pac-12 championship game. The end of the day, it really is these two teams kind of fighting for the number one scraps. you know, there are other teams there, and you know, you've got your definitive rankings that we've clearly talked about before. but I think there are some other teams that can break into this, and obviously these next few weeks of the season are going to determine that. But right now, at least, you know, this was a big step forward. I actually put Washington as my number one team in the AP top 25.
That. Yeah, that's not that bold. I mean, it's really not that bold to rank Washington number one.
Look, I didn't think that I was going to be like, you know, among like a million people voting Washington, but I was surprised that I was only one of two. I think just looking at their resume, they've got at least one of the better resumes in college football. They don't have quite the same as maybe some others, but they've got, you know, if you compare them to Georgia, their win over a top 25 team against Oregon is better than Georgia's against Kentucky. Right?
Sure.
Like, and sure, they beat South Carolina, and say what you will about South Carolina. I just think right now Georgia is still getting the benefit of the doubt from being the two-time reigning champions, and for good reason. There's no reason not to put them there. But I think based on just what this offense can do for Washington, they're going to be a load, right? Like, I don't think there's going to be many teams that can stop them. This schedule lines up well for them. I know they're playing a much more difficult schedule than last year, but I think they've got a lot of talent, a lot of ability, and they're fun to watch. I mean, Michael Penix Jr., his resurgence, as a college football player at Washington has been phenomenal, and the fact that he's the front runner as the Heisman says a lot, because I mean it is him, right? Like, I don't know of another person in the country that really can compete with him right now, and there's others percolating, right? But I think he is the odds on favorite at this point.
You know, and once you get past Oregon and Washington, I mean, I think that's the, jokes aside about, right, the definitive ranking, but like I think Washington and Oregon, like, that is your top tier. And then I think at this point there's a pretty significant drop off after Oregon, Washington. Mm-hmm. USC,
yikes,
got its doors blown off by Notre Dame. Now, of course, that's not a Pac-12 game, right? USC is still unbeaten in the Pac-12 in the mix, but there seems to be a pretty significant drop-off. And, you know, you look at the way USC played and the way that Notre Dame's defense made Caleb Williams uncomfortable. You can start looking at USC's schedule with Utah on Saturday, right? Utah's defense should not be slept on. Of course, there's problems with the offense still, and we'll get into that. But you start looking at USC's schedule with Utah, and you still have to play both Oregon and Washington,
correct?
Right?
They all play each other this year.
So they all play each other this year. So it's not that crazy to look at USC's schedule and start thinking 9-3, maybe 8-4. 9-3 is more likely, you know, than 8-4. But for Lincoln Riley, at a place like USC, 9-3 is not going to do it. That is a disappointing season, especially when you have Caleb Williams and Zachariah Branch and Dorian Singer and all the skill position guys. That is a disappointment of a season if you're 9-3 at USC.
Well, this is the thing. I think it's been trending this way for USC. You could see it this year. You know, they weren't perfect. They weren't. I mean, they're blowing out teams in some respects, but they're going down to the wire more than they needed to.
They were lucky to beat Arizona.
Oh, absolutely. Arizona should have won that game. I mean, that's the reality of it. You know, but like you mentioned, going into this schedule, it looks like USC could have some problems. And, you know, it's easy to say, oh, USC is terrible, and, you know, there's a good chance that they could still blow out Utah this weekend.
For sure.
But at the same time, they're not on that same level. That's what we're talking about, right? They're not at that same level that they were last year. I honestly do think they got the benefit of the doubt from their turnover margin. They were just completely lucky last year. I mean, a lot of people hearing this will, you know, luck, whatever. Turnovers are luck. Let's be real. Like, I mean, there's some positions where you just come in. I think, you know, looking back at Lander Barton's interception that you and I picked that off before he even picked it. Like, we could see him getting it
the whole way.
Those things aren't luck. That is there. But I think overall in the season, like, getting that lucky is good. So you're starting to see USC. That their offense is still good, right? Like, they have talent. They're going to be good. Caleb Williams, it feels like Caleb Williams is the team right now, and if he's not doing it, nobody's getting it done.
Yeah.
And then you have a defense that is really suspect. That's what's causing problems. So I don't want to dwell too much on this. We'll talk about USC in a couple days as we preview them. But, you know, just going over a couple other fun games, and we could spend, you know, a whole podcast on these.
Yep.
You know, Stanford comes back from down 29-0 to beat Colorado. What an incredible finish.
Colorado. Big Pac-12 After Dark vibes on Friday night for that game.
It was
a lot of fun.
It was so phenomenal.
Yeah.
You have Arizona that absolutely destroyed Wazoo. I think Noah Fafita at quarterback is a phenomenal. I think he's a game changer. And, you know, Jaden Delora, who? I just don't know.
you know, I mean, I try to get around the conference and read a bunch of coverage from the, you know, the various beat writers and the various media outlets. And I'm reading Arizona stuff, and, you know, the beat writers and, you know, the columnists there, they kind of peppered Jed Fish after that win over Washington State. Like, Noah Fifita is doing this. What are you doing when Jaden Delora is ready?
Yeah.
And Jed Fish, very, you know, very veteran move, like, balked at the whole thing, wanted to keep the, you know, the focus on the win, which is, you know, which was a huge win, but that's a thing. That's one of the more kind of intriguing, under the radar ish storylines. Arizona looks fantastic under this freshman quarterback, Noah Fifita. What do you do when Delora's ready? I mean, based on this small sample size, I don't see how you're sitting down Noah Fifita even when Jaden Delora is ready.
Look, the reality is if he's not the starter for Arizona moving forward, there's going to be a billion teams poaching him. Like, he,
for sure,
he's small, right? Don't get me wrong. Like, he's a smaller kid, but he is incredibly talented.
He's doing it.
I mean, honestly, it makes Arizona look like they could potentially be a contender to get to the championship game. Theirs is much harder, just based on records wise. But with him under center, I mean, they're a completely different team. So. And then lastly, you've got Oregon State and UCLA. You know, that was a game that was two defenses that are, you know, Utah's obviously faced, both pretty phenomenal. But Oregon State, man, do not play in Corvallis because they will come at you. So they're a fun team, obviously. And, you know, Utah got firsthand experience of that, at how good they are. So Oregon State's another one of those teams in that realm of championship contenders. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited to see how this Pac-12 shapes up. This is the part of the year where it's exciting, right? Every game, maybe not every game, but every week, there's going to be at least one game.
A lot of games. Yeah. I mean, like, this past weekend, like, almost every game was like, this is a lot of fun. Again, from the Pac-12 After Dark stuff with Stanford, Colorado, and Oregon, Washington, the Arizona State score kind of came out of nowhere, right? Kind of Washington State had kind of stamped itself as not a title contender, but like somebody that you're really going to have to deal with if you're going to get to Vegas. Arizona blew them out. Just a lot of fun over the weekend. And I think I maybe tweeted this on Friday night. It's like, it's a real shame that we're not getting more of this Pac-12 After Dark stuff, right? Because the presidents couldn't get it together and the conference is crumbled. And it's a shame, because the Pac-12 weekends like that is what makes the Pac-12 as much fun as it is.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's, you know, as much as the Pac-12 cannibalizes itself, that's what makes it fantastic, right? Like, anybody that is on the West Coast appreciates Pac-12 football just simply because of that. So also, while we're at it, RIP Arizona State, there's nothing happening there for you. So good luck. Moving on. let's get into Utah football. So first off, before we really break down what happened over the weekend, I want to jump right into the medical redshirt conversation. So obviously, Cam Rising, Grant Keithy have not been available for Utah. This has obviously been a conversation we haven't talked about much at all on this podcast. So, this is the ongoing saga. And quite honestly, I think it feels like, correct me if I'm wrong, going into this game, there felt like a turning point in Utah's offense. And that was a collective on the team, as well as from the fan base, that just says, okay, Cam Rising, Brent Keithy are out for as long as we care, or, you know, can think about. It's now time to move forward with what we've got in front of us. And it felt that way on Saturday, you know. But at the same time, there has to be a look ahead to the future. If Cam Rising and Brant Keithy or whatever combination of that you want are available, do they play this year? Kyle talked about a potential for a medical redshirt. If they want to do it, that obviously puts them in an older category, and the NFL shot completely probably goes out the window. But, you know, you got to be realistic about your chances. What is kind of your overall impression about this whole situation? I know that's a very loaded question based on all that we've talked about, but I guess give it a shot.
Yeah. Look, we're living in a kind of weird time in college football for a number of reasons. You know, you have, how do I put this? We are far removed from the depths of the COVID-19 pandemic, but the remnants of that are still being felt in terms of roster construction, because again, the 2020 season, the shortened weirdo COVID season, was a free year of eligibility for everybody. Mm-hmm. So what you have here is Rising is able to come back and Keithy's able to come back because, you know, Rising specifically was able to come back because you had the extra year from COVID and you had one to use. Keithy just, had not used his red shirt / had the free year. So he's back. So that's one thing. And then you have the NIL stuff, which is helping drive some of the decision making, right? And let's not be naive. Like Rising and Keithy, part of the reason they decided to come back in 2023 was because there was a considerable amount of NIL money to be made. That's not, you know, that wasn't the deciding factor, but it was a deciding factor in them coming back. So here we are. So Rising has not played a snap in 2023. Keithy has not played a snap in 2023, and we are at the midway point of the season. So, you know, you had a lot of fans kind of like realize this and like, can they get a medical red shirt, et cetera? And like, it really hasn't been talked about by you or me or really with the media. And it hasn't been, you know, broached to Kyle, but, you know, between you and Steve Bartle and myself kind of yesterday, Monday during Kyle Whittingham's press conference, we sort of tiptoed up to that possibility. Would Cam and or Brand take a medical red shirt and return for what would be a seventh year in 2024. And Kyle, you know, didn't like dive headfirst into it, but he made it pretty clear that
he was open at least.
He's open to it. And it's an option. And that is one way that this thing could go. So what we're looking at here, just for if you're not familiar with how a medical redshirt works, in this particular case, Rising and Keithy were injured last season. They have not played a snap this season. If neither of them plays a snap at all, if they are completely out, do not play at all, they are very, very likely to get a medical red shirt from the NCAA, right? The whole thing goes through the NCAA, but the case is plain and easy and it will happen. Kyle called it a slam dunk. He backed up a little bit on that. He called it 99%. It's a slam dunk. So what are we looking at here? So they haven't, you know, they're not ready to play. And even if they are ready to play at some point, there is going to be probably a bit of soul searching and decision making between, you know, the families and the inner circles and the coaching staff. Like, do you guys want to come back for a seventh year? To be clear here, we only have what Kyle said on this yesterday. We don't know if either of these guys want to do that next year, if they are seriously considering it. As I outlined kind of in the mailbag this morning, that's out on KSL.com. You know, you have to consider age and health and whatever draft stock is left and NIL opportunities, if those are still there. All of that would go into decision-making. And one more thing, just to put this out there, not to alarm anybody, but again, we are living in weird college football times. You cannot discount the possibility of, okay, one of them, both of them want to come back for a seventh year. That seventh year doesn't necessarily have to take place at Utah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying there are bigger money NIL opportunities for these guys if they chose to leave. A healthy rising, that's tough, that's a relative term. A healthy rising would command a market in the portal. He would have suitors.
He already had Florida this year.
He's already had, you know, there's absolutely teams that have tried to poach him or at least tried to kick the tires. Just keep that in the back of your mind. So, you know, this is where we are. They have not played. There is no promise that they're going to play. And if they are ready at some point, if, you know, if Utah's still in the mix for the Pac-12 championship game, that's a factor. There's a lot of factors here that go into this. But the bottom line is Kyle Whittingham yesterday with the media was at least open to the possibility of these guys not playing at all and coming back for a seventh year in 2024.
And to me, this decision rests a lot on what Utah is going to look like if and when they are available, right? Like, I think we assume that Brant Keithy at this point is maybe more ahead of Cam Rising based on kind of what we've learned from about Cam. That's all
that's
speculative.
Strictly an assumption, but yes.
Exactly, because you know, Brant has obviously, he's well past the 12-month mark. This is a situation where he's going beyond that. You know, is his knee not healthy? He went in for, you know, a minor surgery to kind of clean up some stuff earlier. It's just a question of where he's at. And so to me, you know, if they are cleared, it comes down to, is Utah still, you know, championship caliber ready, right? Like, do they still have the record to be able to compete there? If they don't, I don't know that it's advantageous for Cam Rising or Brant Keithy to come back, regardless of if they make a medical redshirt or if they move on from the program, right? I think the decision, if their decision is to say, okay, even if I get five games in and then go to the NFL or at least try for the NFL,
yeah,
that is a decision obviously they have to make. But I think if they're looking, you know, add even the slightest chance of a medical redshirt or potentially coming back, I don't think, like, that's, I don't know. Like, I think this game specifically is probably going to tell a lot for their kind of inner circle on what they do, just simply because of where Utah can be. So you win this game, if Cam Rising is ready for the Oregon game, you know, that changes it, right? I think that helps it. The reality here too is Cam Rising probably isn't an NFL caliber quarterback, right? Like, I think he would have to show some significant improvement, and maybe he has in his rehab and different things, but the problem is he hasn't put that on tape. So he's limited there, so if he does come back, that also makes him 1 year older. You can argue that to scouts and other people that gives you a lot more credibility, you know, whatever you want to do. Brandt, I think, he's going to be under much more pressure simply because where he was at. Look, 2 years ago, he got invited to the NFL Combine. Like, this isn't something where he wasn't invited and, you know, he was kind of hoping to get to the NFL. He decided to come back because he wanted to play at Utah to be able to kind of run it back, quote-unquote. Then he gets hurt, you know, that absolutely hampered his ability. Can he get back into that NFL Combine area? Have people moved on? That's where this all comes into. So do you just take that NIL money, ride out that college life and enjoy it, knowing that the NFL is going to be a tough sell? Or do you shoot for that and kind of jump? So I don't know that there's clear decisions here yet, but I will say I am happy that we are now to an area where these are becoming more of a discussion. It sucks for Utah because they've got a phenomenal defense, and if they could get even just a moderately improved offense, this could be a dangerous team. But at the end of the day, Cam Rising and Brant Keithy aren't healthy. So you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, you know, I was combing through the Whittingham transcript from yesterday, you know, just preparing to do this podcast. And, you know, I went back to the medical redshirt stuff, and he was I don't want to say wishy-washy, but you could see the wheels turning in his head about these two guys. And essentially what I took away from it was, yes, of course, Kyle would want these two guys to play a snap this year, not play a snap, but play.
Yeah.
But he was also like, well, you know, the clock is ticking. And I thought that was an interesting way to put it, right? The clock is ticking. It's midway through the season. And knowing what we know now about the severity of Rising's injury, are we really going to see Rising this year coming off major reconstructive knee surgery? Like, is that really, again, you can't count it out because he's on the roster and he's on the two deep and he's not been ruled out for the season. But if we're being honest with ourselves, off major reconstructive knee surgery with his injury history, with the shoulder, with his aspirations to at least give the NFL a go, do we really think we're going to see Cam Rising at this point? I think with each passing week, I'm losing confidence in that. And I think you make a good point of this game Saturday against USC. I think that's going to be telling. Like, if you lose this game, you're at two conference losses. You're not dead in the water just yet, but you are on life support. I think how this goes this week is going to be very telling in terms of whether or not we see Rising if and when he is ready.
Well, and the crazy thing about this is if you would have said this at the beginning of the season, you know, should he medically redshirt and then come back next season, part of me probably would have said it would hurt Utah just in the sense of developing quarterbacks, just being able to have a consistent, you know, a path to be able to have somebody. But what we've seen this year is Utah doesn't have a quarterback that they can rely on. And so if you could get Cam next year, like, as much as people want to be able to say development of, you know, whether it was Bryson Barnes, Nate Johnson, Brandon Rose, which we haven't seen, any of those guys could develop this year to be the starter moving into next year. None of that's happened. I don't think Bryson's going to be the starter next year. And look, if he goes on a tear and wins in this next stretch of games and looks like a much improved player, maybe you can have that conversation.
It's still tough to see. Exactly. I mean, we've seen enough of Bryson Barnes and just – have you ever gone back, go back like a decade and go look at like the high school recruits at quarterback that this staff has brought in here? How many of those guys have panned out?
Tyler Huntley, yep.
Find me another one.
That's it, honestly. Like, I mean, Utah's been okay with quarterback, but Tyler Huntley is okay, the only.
Fine. Exactly. But okay is not winning you
no
conference championships at this level. So this is a story for another day, but I've like kind of like tiptoed around this a little bit. There's like a real problem here in terms of developing quarterbacks. And that is a big reason why, you know, the transfer portal is there. The transfer portal is there to be used. Cam Rising was a portal guy. But Charlie Brewer.
I will say, would that conversation change if Cam wasn't hurt? Because look, you've got Tyler Huntley, and then you move into Cam Rising. And let's say he played this year. You know, we're going to play this revisionist history.
Sure.
Does that conversation change, especially if you go into 2024 with, let's assume, Brandon Rose or whoever else is under center? Do you think that changes based on where Utah was at, knowing that they could have developed these guys an extra year under Rising? Or is it because Rising is hurt this year and now all of a sudden things are exposed in a way where Utah hasn't figured it? You know, like the quarterbacks didn't hit, and part of that was injuries and everything else, and we can get over
that. It's not all on the staff. Exactly. Like, there's other factors, but the bottom line is you haven't developed one. And just to your question, yep, it's probably the former. That's what I think. But again, like, all right, look, let's say Rising does not return in 2024 and your room is, look, we don't know what the transfer situation will be, but you're looking at Nate Johnson, Bryson Barnes,
Brandon Rose,
and off in the background is Mack Howard.
Isaac Wilson too. You,
knee surgery's coming, X factor, I hate you. No. that is not a quarterback room.
No,
that you can go into next fall with.
There is a lot of optimism in Brandon Rose, right? Like, I think there based is, on his but
you
arm, just,
you don't know what he is
exactly. Unless you're that very hurt him this year,
unless you are very sure what you have in Brandon Rose, that is not a quarterback room that you can go into 24 with. Fine. And how can you know exactly what Brandon Rose is? He hasn't taken a collegiate snap.
But will it? Like, I mean this with all due respect to the conference. Will it matter based on where the Big 12 is today? The Big 12 is not the Pac-12 this year, right? Like, I think if you put Utah in this current team in the Big 12 schedule this year, I think it's a completely different conversation. I think the Pac-12 is having a great season, and that changes it. So maybe, and look, you know, teams are going to improve. They're going to get transfers. I don't want to, you know, I'm not dogging on the Big 12, but I think just where we're at, I think maybe that gives them confidence. Now, and I think that, you know, if Brandon, let's say, is the guy, I think that gives you confidence knowing that they can come in there and they can have a better shot. It's a lower threshold than what they had this year. That doesn't mean it can't be higher or that the Big 12 will be higher. But I think there is a little bit to kind of pair and kind of quantify that way.
Yeah, no, I think, and we talked about this a little bit, like right after realignment, like ended, like as camp was starting, like you're starting to, of course, we're like dealing with this season, but like off in the distance, you're thinking about 24 and entering the Big 12. You look at Utah's roster projected into 24, that is a top three Big 12 team.
Oh, easily.
Going into next season, but you need a quarterback. You need a quarterback, and I don't know that they have a quarterback that they can go into 24 with. Just, again, based on what we've seen, I think the staff is still very optimistic that Nate Johnson can potentially be the guy, but we have what we – you're shaking your head now.
I don't know. The conversations that we've heard recently, I just don't – I think they've kind of moved on, and I think they don't think that he can get there. I think if he's going to do something, and this is all purely me, I haven't talked to anybody about this.
Yeah.
I think he has to move on to another program, or he has to change positions.
Oh, okay. That's where you are.
That's where I'm. That's personally where I'm. I'm not saying he can't get to that point, but I just feel like my sense of the way Kyle is talking about it and the way Andy talked about it, and we'll get into that.
Yeah.
I feel like they've kind of gotten to a point where he is a backup to a backup if they need, but I almost feel like they would even throw out Brandon Rose or Luke Batari out there over Nate at this point, just simply based on what they've seen out there. He's not ready for it yet. He hasn't developed the way that they need to.
He's not ready for it yet.
Well, and exactly. And I understand your point that, you know, he couldn't still be the future. I don't know if that ship has kind of sailed, right? Like, has he gotten his opportunity and it hurt him? Or is this a situation where it's just like, look, we understand you were under a very tough constraint. Let's give you an opportunity. I don't know. I think Brandon Rose was always kind of that guy that they wanted to develop and had the higher ceiling. And so the fact that you can get him in, and if he is that guy, that completely pushes Nate to the side, in my opinion.
We're not going to spend the whole show on this, but just to kind of wrap this up, if what you're saying comes to be, and again, it's a fair notion and it might prove accurate, but if what you're saying is true, that they're like ready to move on, if that's the case, I would probably say that they have done Nate Johnson like a pretty great disservice.
Sure, sure.
Splitting
but,
number
but
one.
Do they have any
practice.
Other option though? Well,
no,
okay. The rep situation—that's a completely different thing. They
that's
screwed him over that way.
Of the situation.
Oh, absolutely. That one. You know, they absolutely shot themselves in the foot by giving Cam the full reps and then deciding to go with Nate like 2 days before. So I will give him that. But yes, I do think it's been a tough situation.
And just going back to, I've referenced this before, just going back to his high school days, like he was a COVID era recruit without a lot of film, hadn't played a lot of quarterback. Utah, specifically Kyle McDonald, right, who's now at USC, Kyle McDonald saw Nate Johnson as an athlete and they offered him as an athlete. And Nate Johnson was adamant that he's a quarterback and the kid wanted to play quarterback and he was not going to settle for being an athlete or a DB or whatever. So if this gets to a point of, we want you to play something else, we don't want you to play quarterback, we want you to play whatever, safety, nickel, whatever, I'll be curious to see where that goes, because that kid wants to play quarterback. And if he's not going to play quarterback here, would he be willing to play quarterback elsewhere?
Yeah. And I think that's where his desire is, obviously, like you mentioned. I mean, every other school that recruited him wanted him to be an athlete as well, and so Utah was a big reason that he came to Utah for a big reason because of them projecting him as a quarterback. So I don't know. I just think with how quarterbacks are stacking up and the fact that you've got to bring in guys, and to no fault of his own necessarily, I think this is just a tough situation for him, and I don't know that it helps him knowing that, you know, you've got to come back next year. So it'll be interesting. I'm curious to see how it all shakes out. I don't know. Like I can't.
I don't
wait.
Know is the motto of this Utah football season. No,
we're just
going to
put our podcast. Our podcast we're going to change the name to "I Don't Know You."
Or just put a banner on this like StreamYard. Just "I Don't Know." Yeah, I don't know.
I'm good with that. I'm good with that. Well, let's jump into another topic about this. Let's talk about a player who is willing to do whatever the coaches ask and has been phenomenal, and that is Sione Vaki. Sione Vaki rushed for 158 yards, had two rushing touchdowns. One was for 72 yards. The other was a one-yard rushing touchdown. But he was an all-around, just completely different game changer for Utah's offense. They used him as kind of the number two running back. They used him in wildcat formations. They used him in a lot of different ways. He even was a receiver on a couple routes. There was one where, fingertips away, Bryson Barnes, if he could just pull it back just a little bit, or Vaki could run a little straighter, maybe they connect. But
that was six.
Phenomenal play.
Yeah.
I mean, the crazy thing is you're going away from this, and Vaki could have been a three-touchdown guy, had, what, probably 200 rushing, well, it would have been 158, and then, what, 50 receiving yards and all
that.
Over
200 all-purpose if they hit
that. It's insane. So,
yeah.
I don't know, just kind of what were your overall impressions about Vaki and kind of what is moving forward with him as the season progresses?
Yeah, you know, so if you've watched this Utah offense between Barnes and Nate Johnson and Nate Johnson back to Barnes, et cetera, they've been sort of stuck in mud a little bit, right? I think the UCLA game was a pretty good indication of the struggles that this, you know, that this Utah offense faces. You didn't have any like pop, so to speak, and there was no spark and there was no like big playability. So you take Sione Vaki, who, look, in high school had a lot of experience as a slot receiver. I think he might have played some running back too in high school, but he played in the slot in high school, and he had a lot of yards, a lot of receptions, a lot of all-purpose stuff. So you're looking for a spark. So here's Sione Vaki. You know, you're all Pac-12 caliber safety, and you move him into essentially a running back slash wildcat, you know, slash right direct snap type of role, and he was awesome. And he was dynamic, and he made things happen. He provided that pop, and he provided that spark. I thought Andy Ludwig, right, the offensive coordinator, yesterday when we talked to him, I thought his summation was pretty good. Like, Jaquindon Jackson is this inside bruising downhill runner that can get you 4, 5, 6 yards on a carry, but then Sione Vaki is sort of this complement, right? He can go off the, you know, off the edge, make something happen with his speed, as we saw in that 72-yard touchdown run, right? Hand off, saw the hole, gone. So he was awesome. He provided that pop. And between Kyle Whittingham's post-game press conference Saturday and Witt yesterday and Ludwig yesterday, this Vaki thing is going to continue, right? There's too much potential there to go away from it. And Ludwig was very adamant, like, until Coach Whittingham says, don't give Sione Vaki the ball, we're going to keep giving Sione Vaki the ball. So I will be curious Saturday against USC, which obviously has a ton of speed, more speed than Cal. What do you do with Vaki? It sounds like the package for Vaki is going to not only continue, but also expand in terms of what they're willing to try and what they're asking him to do. And Vaki's play, at least on Saturday, Vaki's play took a considerable amount of pressure off of Bryson Barnes. Bryson Barnes did not have to make every play, didn't have to make every throw. I thought Bryson Barnes looked more confident Saturday than he has at any other point during the season. Even the first half of the Florida game where he looked great, Bryson Barnes looked very, very confident. And a lot of that is because of Vaki's play, and you ran for 315 yards, and Jaquindon Jackson's going for six at a clip. So did Utah find something with Sione Vaki, at least for a week? And again, I'll be curious to see where this whole thing goes as the level of competition and the level of athleticism gets ratcheted up against USC.
Yeah, I think it's going to change, right? But I think it can still work for Utah. And I you know, there was a lot of comparisons to Vaki as the next Eric Weddle, obviously playing both sides. And those comparisons, they're not shying away from. Even Andy Ludwig said those two are 100% similar type players. So yeah. Those comparisons are there. But as you were speaking, you know, Vaki is the Britton Covey of the offense now, right? Like, he is the guy that you can use him in every facet of that offense. I mean, imagine him in a jet sweep, imagine him in that wheel route. I mean, he's
no doubt
he has the ability to be able to do whatever Utah needs him to do on offense. Obviously he's a bigger guy, so he can pass protect. He probably doesn't have the same experience just based on not being the guy that's expecting to take the hit instead of delivering the hit. So there are some things there. But I think, you know, going back to that Nate Johnson conversation, Sione Vaki is completely hurting Nate Johnson because he's taking out the package for Nate Johnson. They talked about it. The coaching staff talked about it to us yesterday, saying that basically Sione Vaki is the guy, right? Like, he's the guy that is filling in that Nate Johnson package where – you know, Johnson was expected to come in there for whatever amount of plays, and we never really truly saw it because they bungled that as well. But I know we're just getting there.
I'm sorry. Go on.
No, it is comical. But I think Nate was expected to be this guy that had a lot of speed off the edge and was able to break away, and we saw it last year in some of the design packages for him. But you're seeing a completely different element with Sione Vaki. You've got a bigger guy. You've got a guy that isn't worried about whatever things he's trying to do in terms of, I got to be a quarterback or whatever that may be. You have a guy that's just out there trying to have fun and be a playmaker, you know, and he enjoys it. And it's a breath of fresh air for this offense. It allowed, like you mentioned, Bryson Barnes to be able to work. I mean, Bryson made some plays where, like, he was evading tackles and still doing things that helped. It helped that he had an offensive line that protected for him Saturday. He's probably protecting him today as well. But, you know, everything kind of worked together. But part of that was Vaki changed the game in a way that allowed the defense to not just basically load up the box, right? Like, he wasn't running it in a way that they could load up the box. They had to respect the edge play. They had to respect him as a downfield threat. But that also opened up Mikey Matthews. That opened up a lot of just different facets of the game. Muneer McLean down the field. There was a lot of things that changed. One player changed that. And it's not like it was some dynamic change and it was like, oh, he's doing all these great things. I mean, he was. But it was just little simple things that Vaki brought that allowed that offense to just feel more comfortable. It allowed them to be able to have that confidence in themselves that they've been lacking. You know, you have Mikey Matthews, who has 7 of 7. You got guys that were being able to make plays in different facets. You got an offensive line that could protect better. It all works, and Vaki was that guy that did it. Like, I don't want to put it all on him because Bryson also changed that, but I think that's the type of player that Sione Vaki can be, and it's going to grow. It's going to be something that we see moving forward.
And if you are sitting here on, Tuesday morning,
yep.
If you're wondering, like, what happens with Nate Johnson now, right? Because all we've heard, and you and I have talked about at length, is like, look, Nate Johnson's skill set and his athleticism demands that he be on the field in these wildcat, direct snap, doing it with your legs type of situations. If you're wondering what Nate Johnson's role might be, well, Andy Ludwig was pretty clear at the end of yesterday's media availability. He was very clear that Nate Johnson's role, that type of role for Nate Johnson, will be minimal now. Mm-hmm. And he was clear that Sione Vaki is doing what Nate Johnson does, but better. That's what Nate Johnson's role is now, minimal. He's going to be the backup. As long as Rising is out and Barnes is starting, yeah, Nate Johnson is one snap away from quarterback. But everything that we've talked about and everything you've heard about, you know, Nate Johnson's athleticism and he needs to be on the field and he will be on the field, those reps are going to Sione Vaki. So that's kind of another element that I'm going to write about later this week. I'm going to go a little deeper on this topic, but like, not good if you're Nate Johnson. You know, the quarterback stuff has not panned out as you said, Josh, and now whatever role you might have had out of the Wildcat is going to somebody else. And honestly, frankly, going to somebody else with good reason, because that player is doing it better than what he was doing.
Exactly. And I think that's just the nature of where this program is right now. Yeah. You know, they're trying to find playmakers, and you know, your best examples are two games where the offense didn't do anything. So, I mean, you know, Nate has as much of himself to blame as everything else to blame. Once again, it's not all his fault, but he didn't make the steps that they needed to, or at least he didn't give them the confidence that they needed to. Not to say that he can't be that guy moving forward or stuff. I just think it's a tougher situation for him now, and he may have missed his opportunity. Speaking of quarterbacks who have stayed engaged, Bryson Barnes, you know, he mentioned to us on Saturday that his injury was bruised ribs. Bruised ribs are not easy to recover from. It's not like just a bruise where, you know, once it heals, you're fine. Ribs, they stick with you, right? Like, if you've ever had a bruised rib, it hurts like crazy. So don't sneeze or cough or anything like that. I asked him if he wears anything to protect him. He says no, just plays through the pin.
Said no.
I remember like years ago watching Tony Romo. He had bruised ribs or was broken ribs or something like that with the Cowboys, and he had those Kevlar like protectors.
I remember that.
Bryson Barnes is out there now, and the funny thing is we'll get into this in a story that I'm going to write for KSL.com tomorrow, just talking about his life on a farm and wrestling and different things that way. I mean, this kid is built to take hits, right? Like he's taken it his whole life. The fact that he's been benched multiple times, he's taken heat from fans. I don't know if there's one more polarizing character in Utah football history than Bryson Barnes, and all he's done is try his best. Like it's amazing that, you know, when Pete Thamel was the one to officially tweet it out on what was it, Saturday morning?
Saturday, yeah.
I have never seen Twitter go more crazy about a guy that they just can't stand, and yet they love to support him as well. It's like the weirdest thing. And I don't, like, I get it, right? He's limited. Like, we all see it. We understand it. Like, he's not.
It's not news. Like, no, yes.
But it's just, like, it's insane. Like, he keeps getting hit and coming right back up and does, you know, absorbing the punches and continues to win games for Utah and giving them the best chance that they've got, because, quite honestly, they don't have any other shot. So Bryson is doing it. I don't know. Like, you got to love the guy just for that alone, the moxie to be able to keep fighting. But, yeah, I mean, It is a weird situation that he's the starter, he's out, he's back, he's this, he's everywhere, he's gone. Like, this has been the most crazy merry-go-round type situation, and yet Bryson Barnes is still left standing.
I love a good, you know, hometown, home state, local boy makes good type of story. And that's what Bryson Barnes has been. And look, yes, we know he's limited, and yes, he's probably not a he's probably not a legitimate like 12 game power five starter. Fine. Like, we all know that, but like, what more are you asking of Bryson Barnes? And yes, the Baylor game was a mess. You know, they saved that one. You know, I don't really have a ton to add. Like, you know, I thought you put it pretty well, right? He's taken hits, literally and figuratively, and he keeps coming back. And he might not be a legitimate like 12, 14 game power five starter, but he's a good backup quarterback. And this is the situation that we're in. Like, if it's not Rising, it's going to be Bryson Barnes. Tough kid. You know, you asked, I think it was you who asked, like, are you wearing any sort of protection for the ribs? And when he said no, I was like, my heart kind of dropped. I'm like, you're playing college football, like 10 days removed from bruised ribs, and you're not wearing any. He went to the hospital, Bryson. But yeah, and then he brought up the pig farming, and you know, he wrestled at Milford High School, which I didn't know that Barnes was a wrestler at Milford, but like that like fits him exceptionally well, that he grew up how he grew up and he wrestled at Milford High School. So look, this is where Utah is, and you can complain about it or you can embrace it, but like, this is what it is. And I referenced in the mailbag this morning that, like, not only is Brycen Barnes the starter, he is probably entrenched as the starter until if and when Rising is ready. Like, I don't think they're going back to Nate Johnson.
No.
I think that particular ship, like going back to Nate Johnson this season, that ship has sailed. They are committed to Brycen Barnes, and just embrace it. Like, there's been a lot of complaining and some of it's valid, and I understand the fandom. Just, it is what it is. And you're either going to embrace it or you're going to get mad with it. And I think getting mad with it's a little too tiresome. That's my opinion.
The one thing, not the one thing, one of the things that people love about Cam Rising is he will fight. He will be the leader of a, you know, if you're going to war, he will be on the front lines and he will go toe to toe with anybody. We've seen him take hits in games. That is who Brycen Barnes is, right? He's different. They're not the same player. But I think that gives an offense confidence. They see a guy that is willing to go toe-to-toe with anybody else on there and fight. That's, you know, like, there's all these things that you want to quantify. You want to talk about passing yards and rushing yards and all this other stuff. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes like that that gives an offense confidence. And if you get somebody like him that does it, that helps. Not once again, I feel like we keep bagging on Nate Johnson, or at least it sounds like we're bagging on Nate Johnson. They trusted him, but the difference is Brycen is out there literally giving his life, you know, for this team, and he's willing to fight and continues to come in there and doesn't do it in a way that sounds like he's cocky, but also doesn't do it in a way that he's going to shy away from competition, right? Like, right. It's just this kind of perfect, humble, hard farm working, you know, pig farmer who just goes in there and does his thing. So with that said, you know, one thing I asked Kyle Whittingham about it, I said, where does Brycen Barnes need to develop as a quarterback? And it was, you know, he was clear. He said he needs to develop trust in his downfield throws. He's got to be able to see that even though, you know, maybe his wide receiver hasn't broke free from the DB, you know, 10 yards down the line, he's got to believe that 20 yards down the line that he will, and he's got to make that play. Right. You know, that is where Brycen has to go. He did that with Munir McLean. He got that with Sione Vaki, obviously, on those two plays. But he's got to trust that more. He's got to look more than just a guy is open. College football, especially moving into the NFL, you're projecting where that ball is going to be. And so you've got to be able to get there. And so if Brycen is going to be the guy, that's kind of where he has to get there. He has to be able to figure that out, or else this is an offense that, yes, they played well against Cal. And Cal usually has a tough defense, and it wasn't up to snuff like compared to Oregon State or UCLA. But he's got to get better. He's got to improve, and I think that's where they need to take him at the next level.
Yeah. And again, you know, this season kind of is what it is. You know, you start looking ahead to next season and just what the room looks like, and can Brycen Barnes, like, be the starter? I still think that's a pretty sizable indictment that Brycen Barnes is playing in all these games and starting, and you just can't find a scholarship kid that can kind of supplant him. But you know, this is what it is, and yeah, there's going to be plenty of time to hammer everybody who deserves hammering on the quarterback situation. But you know, I think we talked about this before. Florida, Brycen Barnes can like win some games, some games. Brycen Barnes can't win every game, but Brycen Barnes can win a bunch of games if you're not asking him to do everything. And they didn't ask him to do everything against Cal, right? You had Vaki and Jaquindon Jackson, and that was carrying the load. Brycen Barnes just has to make a throw here and there. Make a throw here and there. Don't turn the ball over. That's like the number one thing that Kyle Whittingham says about Barnes or any quarterback. Take care of the ball. And, you know, I'll be curious to see kind of how this USC game sort of pans out. I think I thought for a while that, like, Utah would have to keep up in a track meet, you know, with USC. And that might still be the case. But we saw Notre Dame do some things, and Notre Dame has better personnel on defense in some respects than Utah. So let's not take the Notre Dame game as like the straight blueprint of what Utah should do. But I definitely think that, you know, that Notre Dame exposed some things, and, you know, you saw sort of a quintessential Kyle Whittingham game against Cal, like running the ball and controlling the clock. I don't think Utah is going to win this game, but I've talked myself more into this could be a game instead of Utah just getting boat raced out of the Coliseum.
Yeah, and we'll, like you know, mentioned, we'll talk more about this later in the week, but I think you're right. I think Notre Dame does serve to some extent as a blueprint, but I don't think it's the blueprint, right? I think there's a lot of things what Arizona did. I think there's a lot of just different things where USC is not whole. Their defense is suspect. If anything, it's maybe worse than last year. That's hard to know. But I think, you know, this is still a tough environment. It's going to be difficult. They're obviously going to be without Cole Bishop for the first half. Right. That is hard. And we can talk about that impact, you know, more on Thursday. But I think that is the difference here, too, is, you know, Utah has to play as clean football as possible on Thursday or on Saturday. Man, I am really all over the place. This week
it's already Tuesday.
I know.
Settle in, man.
It's been a long week and it's Tuesday. But they have to play clean, right? And Utah hasn't traditionally been a great road team, especially over the last few years. So this will be tough. You know, this is not going to be a situation that Utah's going to go in there and think that they can just come in and win. Can they win? Sure. I have faith that Utah can win at USC. I just think the odds are absolutely stacked against them. So it'll be interesting. You know, like I said, we'll talk about this Thursday. So let's change subjects a little bit. This morning, Utah was ranked number 5 in the AP Top 25. And when I say Utah, I mean Utah women's basketball. There's so many Utah, right? Like, here we go.
There's a lot of Utahs.
There's a lot of Utahs. But no, Utah women's basketball ranked number 5 in the preseason Associated Press Top 25 poll. That's huge. This is their highest ranking ever. Obviously, they're coming off of a Sweet 16 appearance where they took LSU, the reigning champion, down to the wire. Honestly, probably should have won that game. There was a few mistakes there at the end, and LSU capitalized and got it done. It's still crazy to think that all of the success that, you know, Angel Reese and LSU had can almost be washed away if Utah makes some free throws or makes some changes there at the end. But this is a stacked team. Obviously, we had that interview with Lynn Roberts a couple weeks ago, and if you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out. She's honest. She's open. She's not shying away from expectations. But I guess, like, for you, when you see something like that, does that change your expectations of this team? Does it cement it? What does this do for Utah moving forward?
You know, it just sort of exasperates maybe what the expectations already were. And when I say expectations, that's not necessarily from me or you or any of the other local media. That's from Lynn Roberts, because, you know, you listen to Lynn Roberts not only on our podcast, but like doing other media during the off season. She's starting to crank up some of that now that they're in the preseason. Lynn Roberts is like pretty liberally tossing around like Final Four.
Oh yeah, easily.
As the goal. And like, you look what's coming back, not only Alyssa Peely, right, the Pac-12 Player of the Year, but like there's like every player of consequence is back from that team that shared the Pac-12 regular season championship with Stanford and hosted 2 NCAA tournament games. And as you said, you know, was on the doorstep of beating LSU. And if, you know, look, we can, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but like, you beat LSU, I think they win that regional final and go to the Final Four. But again, every player of consequence is back. And on paper, Lynn and her staff have done some good portal diving. They've gotten pieces that they needed. Holes have been filled. So now you're in a situation where there was already a considerable amount of hype. Then the AP comes out with its poll, has Utah ranked number 5, and the expectations are big. And throughout my time, like the last decade covering college basketball, I've always felt like if you have a team that you think is going to be good, you need to go out and schedule like your team is good. So you have all these players coming back. So what does Lynn Roberts do? They're going to play in the preseason WNIT at Baylor road game. Okay, that's a top 20 game. And then even more high profile, they're playing at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut on December 9th against Dawn Staley and South Carolina, which is ranked number 6. So, you know, before Christmas, we're going to find out some things about what this, you know, what this Utah team is, what it could be. If you have a good showing against, you know, either or both of those teams, I think the expectations get ramped up even more than they already are if you get one or even both of those games.
Well, and the difference too this year is, I mean, there's a lot of expectations on Utah last year, just kind of their rise and could they live up to it? But there wasn't a ton of fan support, at least early, right? And near the end of the season, as it started to build and as it started to grow, that place was rocking. That place was way more energetic than the men's. There was a lot of fun there. But now you're going into this with even more optimism, right? Now this is where Utah has to kind of show, okay, look, we've done it. We were co-champions in the Pac-12 regular season last year with Stanford. This is where we can kind of take the next step. You know, Lynn Roberts, well, as we've talked about, she doesn't shy away from those expectations. She wants to be at the top. She wants, I mean, who doesn't, right? But I mean, I think she more than anybody is open and vocal about that. She wants the Huntsman Center to be a rocking environment, and it has been in those last few games of the season. This is a great opportunity for Utah basketball to be able to kind of cement itself in a dominant Pac-12 conference in the last season to really just showcase what it has, right? Six teams are ranked in the top 25 this year in the women's basketball. You've got UCLA, which is number 4. They were actually picked 2nd in the Pac-12 media's polls. So this is going to be a battle between those two teams. You've got Stanford at 15, Colorado at 20, USC at 21, and Washington State at 24. This is going to be tough. There's also 3 other teams receiving votes. So, you know, if Utah can do this, if they can get back to where they think they can be, if, you know, with this team, with Alyssa Pealey, the reigning Pac-12 player of the year, this is a phenomenal, phenomenal team to watch. Their season tickets are cheap. Look, I'm not advocating to go, like, do all this stuff. I'm not paid for it by the university. I cover them. But, I mean, like, that's what fans want, right? Like, you want to be able to watch exciting product, right? Men's are trying to get to there. Men are trying. They have opportunities, and I think maybe they can be there this year. But the women's game is such a finesse game. It's so fun to watch. It's just a different, it's not physical necessarily, at least to the same extent that men's are. It's fun. There's a lot of fun to be had at these women's basketball games. So, you know, if you're a fan of basketball and you haven't given women's basketball a shot, honestly, this year is the year to do it. Like, it's fun. Season tickets are cheap. I think she said it was, what, like $50 for a whole season?
For the whole season,
That's nothing. Like, that won't even buy you, like, a third of a ticket to the Oregon game next week for your floor football. So, you know, just go enjoy it. Have some fun with it. But I think, you know, I think this is a season that anybody that is a fan of basketball is going to enjoy.
Yeah, look, and again, no free ads, but I'm just saying, you know, the brand of – if you're trying to decide whether to, like, get on the bandwagon or, like, go check out a game, like, look, not for nothing, like – Lynn, like, they play a fun brand of basketball. Like, they're going up and down 94 feet. They're shooting a lot of threes. Yes, they're playing defense, but, like, their offense is, like, prolific. And I can promise you, like, looking at the early part of the schedule, when they've got, like, some early stuff against, like, low major teams, they're going to put up, like, 90, 100, 110. There's going to be a lot of scoring. So, just saying, you know, it is a very it is a very watchable brand of basketball. If you have young children and you're trying to get your kids into the sport, starting there, that's a good starting point. That's a fun team that plays a good, like, watchable brand of basketball.
Exactly. And it, you know, they get a first exhibition game Wednesday. So it's a little earlier than most. I think they have 2 exhibition games this year. So you'll get that. Their season doesn't start till November, but you do get 2 opportunities to see them play competition. And, like Josh said, they're going to be lights out from 3. I think they even do a promo. Every time they shoot a 3, there's T-shirts or they throw T-shirts out. I'm trying to remember something from like last year. So, yeah. Look, if you want to go have some fun, it's a great environment. So, yeah. Anything else, Josh? We've got a lot still to talk about, but we can split it up for next week or next time.
Yeah, no, it's a big work week. 2 podcasts this week. Today is Tuesday. We have a second podcast set up for Thursday. That one is going to be pretty strictly USC game, talking about different factors. And if any news breaks before that,
let's hope not.
If anybody's out for the year, if Rising decides he's going to, no, I'm kidding. I'm not going to put that into existence. It's going to be a quiet Tuesday and a quiet Wednesday. No, sure. But seriously, we do appreciate the support. We appreciate everybody clicking, listening. Feedback is always appreciated. Josh Furlong at JFurKSL. Myself, Josh Newman, at Joshua_Newman. We appreciate any and all feedback.
We appreciate it, guys. We'll talk to you again on Thursday. Have a good one.